This is Upstate's HealthLink on air, Linda Cohen along with you. In this rapidly changing healthcare environment, one that is attempting to curb the rising costs of our healthcare system, physicians face some tough obstacles. These include the increased costs of operating a practice, time-consuming regulatory burdens, increasing challenges in reimbursement by insurance companies, and preserving the time-honored doctor-patient relationship in this new environment, just to name a few. Well, here with some insight into these challenges and hopefully some answers is Dr. Andrew Gurman. He's the president-elect of the American Medical Association, and he is also an orthopedic hand surgeon in private practice in Altoona, Pennsylvania. Dr. Gurman is joining us by phone from his office. Welcome, Dr. Gurman.
Good morning. It's nice to be here.
Yes, thank you so much. So the pressures on doctors are growing in this new healthcare environment, and things have certainly changed quite a bit since you were in medical school right here at Upstate Medical University. Isn't that correct?
Absolutely. Even the name has changed.
Yeah. So let's talk about some of the things, some of these issues, and potentially what the AMA's stance on them are. First, let's start with the very big sea change that's taken place probably within the last decade, but much more so in the last 5 years or so, is what's been the effect on the mandated use of electronic medical record systems on physicians?
Yeah, that's a big subject, and I have to give a disclaimer to start with. I'm a dinosaur. I don't have an electronic health record.
Oh, wow. That's a very interesting perspective then.
Yeah, and I guess I should start with explaining why. You know, a couple of years ago, I knew that I would be moving towards the president-elect position in the AMA. Still had to be elected, but was hoping that that would happen. I am now 63 years old. I'm in private practice, and the economics of doing it simply didn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
So for me personally, I made the decision that even with all of the subsidies and all of the rest of it, that even forgetting the loss of productivity and all of the other bad things that go with it, that from a purely economic perspective, it made absolutely no sense for me to do this.
Right, and that's, I think, going to the heart of, I think, what I would like to talk about. Is this a major burden, or in what way has this become a major burden for those physicians out there?
Yeah, I'll get to that in a second.
Sure.
The other half of my disclaimer is that as a very subspecialized practice, I only do wrist and hand. There's actually very little of the benefits that one can accrue from an electronic health record that would apply to my practice.
Okay.
So we'll hopefully circle back to those benefits in a minute.
Okay.
The problems for using an electronic health record are myriad. There are some good things there, but it requires a lot of investment of time, money, energy, personnel, whatever, to get up and running. There are over 400 different medical records, electronic health records, available for purchase. None of them talk to one another.
Right.
So there are lots of frustrations involved with that. There is data security to deal with. There are hardware and software issues. There are updates. There's, you know, like any time you get a new computer for anything, magnified a lot because you have privacy requirements. You have very real concerns about missing things and whatever. The loss of productivity for most physicians is about 30%.
Mm-hmm.
That is either made up in working 30% harder, and we hear a lot from physicians who are writing, it's 10 o'clock at night, I'm still in the office finishing up my charts when I stopped seeing patients 3 or 4 hours ago. So there are lifestyle satisfaction issues that go along with electronic health records. There are some good sides. There are alerts and prompts about things that might be missed in other ways. There are some modules dealing with prescriptions that are very helpful with drug-drug interactions, medication renewals, vaccine alerts, things like that. So there are some helpful parts of it. But the fact is that electronic health records have really intruded on the doctor-patient relationship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most of us went to medical school because we like taking care of patients. You know, when you think of it, it's an incredibly intimate act for someone to come and say, care for me.
Yes, absolutely.
And to open themselves up, body and soul. It's a tremendous privilege to interact with people that way. And unfortunately, what happens now, and I see this when I go to my doctor for a physical, is that I'm talking to his back for a good portion of the encounter, and he turns around, does what he has to do, and he turns around and he's typing again. You know, that's not an intimate relationship, and it's not always a satisfying relationship.
No, I strongly agree with that. Things that I've read are that with electronic medical records, there's instead of reducing the time, it doesn't save time, it adds to the amount of time the physician must spend. They have to add staff, that decreases productivity, and as you said, it can also decrease job satisfaction. And some people, critics have suggested that doctors have become data clerks in terms of just, you know, being able to check all the boxes. But let me go on to some other issues. How about something like all the regulatory issues that are now facing doctors? We have the Health Information Protection Act, the HIPAA Act, and OSHA, and things like meaningful use. How are those affecting your members?
Well, OSHA and HIPAA are the law of the land. They've been the law of the land for a while, and we simply learn to adapt to them. HIPAA has some very good things in it regarding patient privacy and patient expectations that their information will be treated securely. So we make an effort to comply with not only the letter of the law, but the spirit of the law. Meaningful use is a problem.
Why don't you help us understand exactly what that is for
our
listeners?
We were talking about electronic health records a moment ago. You know, we surveyed with the AMA surveyed with the RAND Corporation, did a large study of physicians in all sorts of different practices, and 87, or actually almost 100% of us hate our electronic health records. 87% of us don't want to go back to paper because we realize the benefits of the record. But when we face challenges like meaningful use, which is regulation that says you must hit these certain
benchmarks,
data points, benchmarks, mm-hmm. whatever, in order to qualify for meaningful use, we sit here knowing that that actually has no meaning to quality of care or to the kind of practice that we do. For example, in hand surgery, there are no benchmarks for meaningful use. There are no quality measures specific for hand surgery, so I'm asking patients about smoking, I'm asking about whether they had a pneumococcal vaccine, whether they had a flu vaccine. Perhaps in the past we asked, have you had a mammogram for females? You know, these are important health questions, but they're not why you go to see a hand surgeon.
Right, they're out of the realm of your particular expertise.
Exactly right.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on air. I'm Linda Cohen here along with Dr. Andrew Gurman, the president-elect of the American Medical Association. We're talking about the issues facing physicians today, some of the struggles and obstacles and challenges. Getting back to this idea of quality measurements, I mean, I want to kind of have a broad overview of what's happening in medicine. Doctors are being asked to do more in terms of all of this paperwork and all this so-called busy work, and it adds to a lot of burnout and a sense of dissatisfaction. And as you have so well said, there is this potential for a dissolution of the doctor-patient relationship or some limitations of it. But how are we attempting today? The government, with trying to bend the cost curve, is trying to look at different ways of reimbursing doctors. At one point, and up until very recently, we were being paid on the basis of what you do. There's a fee for service. And now insurance companies and the government are looking at a different way, and that has to do with quality. Help us understand that.
Sure. Well, the AMA has been involved with this on all sorts of levels, developing best practices, helping docs try to navigate through all of this. There is always opportunity for improvement and to increase quality. What's being looked at in alternative payment measures is, or alternative payment measure methods rather, is to pay, let's say, for an episode of care or for an illness. So, for example, If a patient has congestive heart failure, the payment bundle will go either to the physician managing the care or the hospital or some combination of both to say, we're not going to pay test by test. We are going to come up with a figure that we think is a reasonable cost for treatment of this, and we're going to pass that on to the physician or the hospital and let you guys decide what's the most efficient way to manage this.
Well, how will that actually affect the patient, though?
Well, if at the all? AMA is very involved in protecting the patient in this, because what we don't want is we don't want there to become an opportunity where denial of care or withholding of care becomes a financial incentive for people treating. So what we are doing is trying to provide physicians with tools to manage things. For example, high blood pressure. We are working with physicians and with some practices to develop best practice methods for treating high blood pressure, to make sure that people stay on their medications, to make sure that they self-monitor, so that if there are payments for episode of care or for disease, people will get better, will do it more efficiently, and everybody wins.
So the idea is to try to emphasize outcomes and quality of outcomes as opposed to being paid for everything you do.
Exactly right.
As a physician. So the idea is there's a perverse incentive for doctors to do more. Sometimes that's the suggestion when it's not necessarily going to help the quality of outcome, whereas here they're trying to focus more on the quality. But I guess my question was, is there, as you mentioned, the potential then to perhaps undertreat?
Well, there is, and that's why it's important that a group like the AMA be involved in establishing best practices and helping people understand what are the benchmarks that we need to reach in order to assure that we are treating people appropriately.
I don't want to run out of time. There's so much we could talk about, but I wanted to ask you how you think all of these challenges that we've just gone over but not only are affecting current physicians, but our new crop of physicians coming up. I mean, it's been said that we're running out or we're going to have a decrease in the number of primary care physicians as a result of the current system. And what are you seeing, or what are you, as you look into your crystal ball, as to what's going to happen going forward?
Well, what's going to happen going forward is that there will be an increased reliance on team-based care. It is very important that physicians be the leaders of those teams because we are the ones with the training, expertise, and experience to do that. But a lot of the care that is provided will be provided by other people practicing within their scope of licensure and experience to the maximum of their capabilities. As far as physicians going into primary care, that's very complex, and I don't know if we have time to go through all of it, but medical students are coming out of schools with huge amounts of debt, and they're making career choices based on their ability to repay that debt. There are lots of ways that we can address that. And the AMA is very involved in these kind of workforce issues, including loan forgiveness, and we have a whole initiative on accelerating change in medical education. That we really didn't even get a chance to talk to today. But the fact is that if you could change medical education so that somebody went through medical school in 3 years rather than 4 years, that would potentially cut their debt by 25% or more might make their choice to go into primary care much easier.
That's a very interesting idea. Well, I thank you so much for sharing all of your insights on all of these very important issues and spending some time with us. And hopefully we will not see a dramatic shortage of primary care physicians will threaten the foundation of our healthcare system. And some of these ideas you've just floated sound very, very interesting and hopeful. Thank you so very much for your time.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
My guest has been Dr. Andrew Gurman. He's an orthopedist and the president-elect of the American Medical Association. I'm Linda Cohen. You're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air.